The story is probably familiar for many of us. The younger son asks his dad for half of the estate because he's apparently not patient enough to wait for the old man to die so that he can inherit it the right way. And amazingly, dad says yes. And the boy goes off with his money and blows it, booze, parties, good times, and then it's gone. And he's in big trouble. And finally, he gets a job on a farm feeding pigs. The ultimate insult, a low blow for a good Jewish boy, serving animals that they considered unclean. He hit bottom. And he got to thinking how good the hired hands had it back home. So he rehearses the speech to himself. Dad, I've sinned against God and you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But if you have any mercy in your heart, is there a chance I could get a job as a hired hand working for you? Back on the farm, Dad hasn't heard from the boy in a long time. He's gone. Maybe even dead. Meanwhile, the runaway, the son who broke his father's heart, starts walking home and probably rehearsing as he goes, Dad, I sinned against you and God. And one day, Dad looks off down the road, as he does often, looking for some sign, some word of his missing boy. And he sees somebody shuffling down the road, dirty, clothes in rags. Dad thinks, oh, yeah, just one more beggar looking for a handout. Looks again. There's something familiar about that walk. Nah, it couldn't be. He's gone. He looks again. And he sees that walk, and he runs off to him, and he gets close to him. Is it my boy? It is. It is. And they stare at each other. This dad, whose broken heart is healed and melted all at once. His son, who is ashamed and afraid, disappointed with himself. He almost forgot to say what he's been rehearsing all the way down the road. Father, I've sinned against God and you. Dad doesn't let him finish. He hugs him. He says, you're alive! You're home! And he washes away his guilt with tears of gratitude. You're home. Then there's the whole merrymaking thing and the fatted calf. A lot of times we like to stop there, but the story's not done. There's the other boy, the one who stayed home, who figured he was the good one. And he says, hey, where's my party? Where's my payoff? I'm the one who stayed home. I did all the work. I put up with your worry and whining all this time. And then he says, now get this. The good boy says to his father, that son of yours, not my brother, not a name, but that son of yours, as if he's a nobody, blows half of your estates on booze and whores, and he comes back and you throw him a party? How dare you forgive him? How dare you forgive him? Oops. There it is, huh? And Dad told him something that anybody who's had their heart broken can understand. He said, son, you still my son? Son, that brother of yours, he's still your brother. That brother of yours was dead, and he's alive. He was lost, and he's found. We had to have a party. So, you ever felt like the one who thought he was the good boy? Well, be honest, I have. It is so easy for envy and jealousy to rise up in us, especially if we find those times when it feels like somebody else is getting a better deal than we are. That kind of thinking destroys a relationship, and it starts to make forgiveness conditional. There's a short line in our story we might miss right toward the beginning. Right after the younger one asked the dad for his share of the estate, we're told he divided his estate among them. Oh. The older one already inherited two. But he was so bitter, he couldn't see it. He was so full of his self-righteousness that he ended up blind to what he already had. Now, this is one of the times when the audience is especially important. The story opens, we're told, tax collectors and other sinners were sitting with Jesus. You may recall, tax collectors were regarded as a special kind of sinner because they collected taxes for the Romans, who were an occupying force. They were local boys, and they collected taxes for Rome, and they were paid on commission. So the more they squeezed out of you, the more they made for themselves. And so Pharisees and scribes were there, too. They were the self-appointed experts on Jewish law. And they believed that they always followed the rules and expected to be rewarded for it. They thought that they were so good that they had the right to sit in judgment of others. So in this case, to take on the role of a father and send that prodigal son packing. And then they pointed at Jesus and they growled. Look at him. He welcomes sinners. And he eats with them. That was meant as an insult. Jesus said it's good news. Jesus says God is not interested in sending us packing when we've been bad. God waits and mourns when we are gone, when we are lost. And God wants to welcome us home and restore us. Friends, there is a party thrown right now, for all of us who have been lost and who want to come to it. When we are confronted with the pain and heartbreak that we have caused, we know that we cannot demand forgiveness. All we can do is ask for mercy. And God, Dad, in this story, God hikes up his robes and runs out to greet us. Tears on his face, welcoming us home, throwing us a party. Because once we were lost, and now we are found. We do not need any practice living like the first son who went off his own way and made a mess out of things. We need no practice doing that. We can do pretty well on our own. And we probably don't need a lot of practice living like the older son who thought he was the good boy in all of his self-righteousness, pointing fingers at those who had hit bottom. We don't need to practice that. We're pretty good at it already. What we need to practice is living like the dad, like God, who, remember, Jesus calls us and tells us to refer to as daddy, to put our pain and our hurt behind, forgiving when everybody else says turn them away. But it is not our job to judge others. It is our job to show mercy, just as God showers us with mercy. So we come here. Those of us who have felt lost, who have felt hopeless, those of us who have gone our own way and sometimes hit bottom, we come here to receive God's grace, even if we are convinced we are the good ones, the ones who are right, to heal us of our pride and our blindness to how we have hurt God and others by pretending to speak for God. And we come here to be transformed, to become more like God, who heals us first, who welcomes us home first, and reminds us that we've always been home with him. That is the real point of this story. We are the kids who need forgiveness. And we are the ones who are transformed to be more like God as carriers of mercy and grace. If you know. If you know what it means to be lost and found. If you know what it feels like to feel dead and be brought back to life. If you know what it means to be bitter or angry, trapped in our prisons of self-righteousness, and then transformed into generous givers of love and grace, then you know how powerful it is to share mercy. He eats with sinners. He welcomes them. Thank God. Thank God. There is room for us at the table, right here. We heartbreakers, we who are convinced that we are the good ones, Christ enters our hearts to transform us and connect us with the one who loves, who heals, and who makes these miracles happen through us. Now in our story, we're not told what happens the next day. I've often wondered about that. Party's over. Back at work. But I think it's intentional that we're not told what happens the next day, because that's where we come in. We get to determine what happens the next day. What it means to have been lost and found. What it means to have been loved back to life. What it means to have been restored when we are convinced that we have given up the right to be loved. And then we are sent. So we get to complete the rest of the story with God's power living in the center of our lives. How will you finish the story? What will you make tomorrow bring?